I struggled some with the placement of this part of our church life today. I didn't know where it belonged. I don't know if it belongs as a part of the sermon. I didn't love it. It certainly wasn't an announcement, and it's necessarily a prayer request. While I'm sure that both the people that I talk about in the next couple of minutes would appreciate your prayers, but there's an important event happening in the life of our church today. A very important event. We have two women from our congregation who are graduating from License to Preach School today in Okemos. They have essentially said to their church, to their denomination, that they are available for service in God's church wherever they are called. On this day, when we celebrate their accomplishments and their achievements, we also celebrate God's work in their life through all of you. It's this community of faith that raised up these two women and commissioned them forward into ministry. And it is a wonderful privilege to be sitting amongst them and to serving alongside them. Andrea Johnson and Janet Wilson, on this day, will be given their license to preach, their license to lead a congregation of their own, or in this one, as Janet's case is, to help provide leadership in word, order, and sacrament. This is how I came to be into ministry, how I grew through the licensing process to seminary to ordination, and I don't know what their future is. They may not know. I just know that at this juncture of their journey, we have lots to celebrate with them. Their commitment to Christ and to their church is a testament to the ways that you have shared fellowship and discipleship over the years. And on their behalf, I'm going to say thank you. They'll have a chance to say that themselves, but it's something to be celebrated. I think especially as we talk about laying down our lives for the people that we love, this is one way that I think that is expressed clearly. So when you see them next, they're not here this morning because they're in Okemos already, finishing the last weekend of their training, and then it culminates in their graduation this afternoon at 3 o'clock. So we are blessed to have them among us and to be a part of their journey. So that's great. John 15, verse 9, I think it reveals perhaps the most important thing about the love Jesus demonstrates for us. It says, I have loved you even as the Father has loved me. Jesus' love is so great and so deep that it is the motivation for everything Jesus does. Even when the Gospels reveal the humanity of Jesus in his impatience for his disciples to learn and in his anger turning over the tables in the temple, Jesus is motivated by his deep love for God and for God's people. When Jesus admonishes the disciples for not paying attention or for failing to grasp his teaching, he is really expressing his concern for them. How many times do I have to tell you, he says. How many times I heard that when I was a kid. When I got older and more, either less respectful or why, I'm not sure which, but as I got older, my answer to that question, when my mom would say, how many times do I have to tell you? I would say, evidently one more. Right? Yeah, and then run or duck. Right? Jesus gets this exasperated with the disciples. He's teaching and teaching and teaching and teaching, and they just aren't getting it. And he says, how many times do I have to tell you? And in saying that, he's expressing his frustration, of course, but also his love for them in that this teaching is so important for their lives that if they don't get it, they're going to miss something. They're not being prepared for their ministry. And so his love for them is the motivation for even his exasperation. When Jesus is turning over the tables and driving out the crooked merchants from the temple, he is angry because people are failing to love one another and demonstrating greed and selfishness in the very place where God's grace and mercy dwell, in the temple of God. And he comes in and they've jacked up the prices on stuff and the exchange rates for the money are three times what they're supposed to be. And they're just taking advantage of people, and Jesus just cannot stomach it. And so he turns over the tables of the money changers and cracks the whip and drives the merchants out of the temple. Why? Because he loves people so much, he cannot watch them abuse one another, take advantage of one another. Even in his anger, it's love that drives the anger. For there's not a parent here that doesn't know that feeling. When you obey my commandments, Jesus says, you remain in my love. Just as I obey my Father's commandments, I remain in his love. Just as Jesus' commandments to love God and love one another are based on love, so too are the commandments from God handed down through Moses. We have a tendency to hear them or think of the Ten Commandments as a list of do's and don'ts in God's church. But they are all demonstrations of God's love. The first four require us to love God, and the last six require us to love one another. God is saying, love each other by not doing these things. Right? The first four, have no other gods but the one true God. You've got enough respect that you have just one. I mean, that's what God is saying. Love me enough. You don't need other gods. Don't make false idols. Don't misuse the name of the Lord. Respect my name. And observe the Sabbath. In some ways, I'm preaching to the choir because you're here this morning, but observing the Sabbath is more than getting out of bed and coming to church. It's taking time with God. It's in our current day language, you might call it quality time with God. Sit with God so that you can both offer God your prayers and your petitions and your joys and your thanksgivings, and so you can sit and listen to God's direction for your life. These first four are all about our love and respect for God, and even setting aside time to worship and to give back to God is about showing our respect for God. And in doing so, we are taking time to rest and to reconnect with God, which is to our benefit. And then the next six are all about loving one another. Honor your father and mother. Do not commit murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not give false testimony or lie or gossip about one another. Love one another enough to care even about what you say about one another. Do not covet or be jealous about your neighbor's spouse or house or car or income or anything else that belongs to your neighbor. No, it's not about what they have. It's about being grateful for what we have. Jealousy breeds anger, breeds resentment. And that is, those things don't fall in the equation of loving our neighbor, or loving others as God has loved us. So these next six are all about loving one another enough to treat one another with respect. They're about caring for others with whom we share this life that in which God cares for us. Keeping God's commands requires us to think about the things we do and say in regard to the impact they will have on those around us. Care enough about others to be careful about the things that you're doing and saying and the ways you're acting, the ways I'm acting. Then Jesus says in verse 11, I have told you these things so that you will be filled with my joy. Yes, your joy will overflow. In another translation, I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Not only is doing the right thing to do. When we do the right things, the joy of the Lord will dwell within us, and our joy will be complete. In other words, when we regard others at least as much as we regard ourselves, it brings us joy, complete joy. You know, selfishness might bring us joy for a moment. You might think, ooh, I got that thing. Yes. Make me joy for the moment. But that kind of joy quickly fades. The kind of joy that comes from selflessly loving one another is a joy that lasts. It's not temporal. It's not temporary. So Jesus continues in verses 12 and 13. This is my commandment. Love each other in the same way that I have loved you. There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. No greater love. In just a couple of chapters here in John's gospel, Jesus will literally lay down his life for all humanity. We're in John 15, but in just a few chapters, in John 18, Jesus will be turned over to those who will betray him, who will falsely accuse and try him and crucify him. After saying greater love has no one than to lay down one's life for one's friends, Jesus literally and willingly lays down his life so that you and I might know the love of God even more, so that we might have access to the love of God for all eternity. Jesus sacrifices himself and then tells us to love one another as I have loved you. Could he have been clearer? Could he have stated that any more clearly? I try in my preaching to make concepts in Scripture mean something today for us today. So what's happening in our life today, this week? What's happening in our life right now that makes me think of the same kind of Scripture? And as we observe Veterans Day this weekend, I thought often about the way that men and women have served in the military. They must understand this command a little differently than I do. Lay down your life for your friends. I don't have firsthand experience, but my observation of and what I know about military service from friends and family members who have served helps me understand some of what happens when people are willing to lay down their lives for one another. There is no greater bond between people than is formed when they rely on one another literally for their lives. My nephews have formed bonds with men and women with whom they have served that I cannot fully understand. The younger of my nephews, especially in the Marine Corps, served 3 tours of combat duty, bullets flying over his head with people next to him looking out for each other in a way that I can't understand because I haven't been there. But when I watch, when I observe the loyalty that those people have one for the other, I know that they understand what it means to lay down their lives for their friends in a way that I never will. When I hear military families talk about the families with whom they waited for their spouses, fathers, and mothers and to return from combat missions, I get the idea that there is a closeness that one can only know having shared that experience. Amy in the office talks about being stationed here and there and other places around the world and waiting for Toby to come back from military service and the importance of the families that they waited with and the bonds that formed around that shared experience and the closeness that they still share. It feels strange for me to even talk about this from the outside as I have such tremendous respect for the level of sacrifice that is required, and I simply cannot know what that takes. I don't know. I do know that not only are these men and women willing to sacrifice for those with whom that they're serving, but the greater causes for which they are serving are God and country, our God and our country. When these military families sacrifice, they are sacrificing on our behalf. For people they don't even know. And I can deeply appreciate what that means for me. And I am grateful. And I am humbled. I'm going to take a moment in our service today to just say thank you. If you served in the military, I'll ask you to stand where you are if you are able and just receive our gratitude. Yeah. Here's how I think this applies to today's lesson. Isn't what Jesus is asking of us as his followers, the same kind of dedication to one another that we see demonstrated by his sacrifice and by those who are willing to sacrifice themselves for their friends? Isn't that exactly what Jesus is asking of us in Scripture? And I don't mean to draw any kind of straight parallels between military service and service in the church, but there are similarities. And wouldn't we benefit from the same kind of closeness and loyalty that comes from these deeply committed and shared experiences? And maybe the question is, don't we share the closeness from deeply meaningful experiences that we share? And people that walk alongside us when we lose a loved one, there's a closeness that comes in that is special. The church, above all else, exists to imitate and demonstrate God's love for God's people. In Jesus Christ, we have seen the full manifestation of that love as an example for us. We also have the promise from Christ that if we live the kind of selfless life he demonstrates, we will know the fullness of his joy. As I said earlier, there are things that bring us joy in this life, but I think we can't know the fullness of that joy unless we really live selflessly. Unless we really are willing to sacrifice. Now, I'm connecting some dots here that you may or may not have considered, but on this Veterans Day weekend, as we admire sacrifices made and the bonds formed in making them, I cannot help but wonder if that's not part of the fullness of joy that comes from laying down our own lives for God's church and God's people. In God's church, this means, at the very least, having the willingness to make practical sacrifices for one another. Think about this from the perspective of even our own opinions. We're sometimes put off when the order of worship isn't what we expect, or when people don't wear the right kinds of clothes to church. We notice. Whether we're proud of it or not, we notice. We get really passionate about our own sense of comfort with worship style and time when we are asked to change those kinds of things. It gets real for us in a hurry. Let's say for starting January 1st, we're going to start worshiping this kind, more modern worship. It's going to happen at 8:30. And then at 10 o'clock, we're going to get together for a traditional worship, because that time is a little better for folks who don't move quite as quickly in the morning. So we're going to accommodate that, and we're going to move that service later. What are the first things that come to mind for you? Right, I'll first tell you we're not going to do that. Right? That's not really our plan, right? Not at this time. But I would think that the first things that came to mind were your own comfort. Oh, man, that doesn't fit my schedule very well. I don't like that idea very much. That doesn't make me feel very good. That's the first thing that came to mind. Even when I started to mention the folks that like traditional worship don't move quite so well as they used to, and so it's harder for them to get around, 10, 11 o'clock would be better for them. Even that was like, oh, boy, I don't know. They've been doing it this long. Right? When I think about our differences and the things that keep us apart in the church, I am embarrassed for us. We will drive across town to save a nickel and a gallon of gas, but if we were asked to drive across town to go to church with someone else in another building, that's another thing. The fact of the matter is that we are more concerned about our own comfort and our own ideas about what church is than we are about being God's church. It is that simple. Sacrifice Seven churches in seven locations with five different pastors in one city. Snapshot of the United Methodist Church in Battle Creek. We all know that this makes no sense. In its time, it did. When those churches were full on Sunday mornings and there were lots of people in them, it made all kinds of sense. Today, that makes no sense. But the things that keep us in this model are all about our own comfort and our own sense of sentiment and loyalty. And I'll remind you, and I say you, not me. I usually use inclusive language on purpose, but I'm using exclusive language on purpose in this sentence. I will remind you that you are in no position to point fingers. Had Chapel Hill United Methodist Church been asked to make the kinds of sacrifices the congregation from First United Methodist Church was asked to make a year ago, I am convinced that the vote would not have been any different. You all told me that. When we got done, you all breathed this collective sigh of relief. Whew, that's over. Only 85% of us thought it was a good idea to invite others into our worship service. As sad as that might be. Because that would mean change. That would mean something different. That would mean I would be uncomfortable. Ooh. How are we demonstrating God's love for one another when we aren't even willing to sacrifice our own comfort long enough to consider those comforts of another? How will we ever lay down our lives if we aren't even willing to lay down our own comfort or opinion? God's church has missed this important command from Jesus. And by failing to live sacrificially, we are also not experiencing the fullness of God's joy, by the way I read this. There are certainly things in this life that bring us joy, but as long as we are unwilling to lay down even our own comforts and opinions, our joy remains incomplete, the way I read this. I have told you these things so that you will be filled with my joy. Yes, your joy will overflow. There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. And that means setting aside our opinions, our comforts, our notions of what it means to be church. Our standards. How much more direct can Jesus be? When we are willing to share the love that Jesus shared with us, it will bring us joy. Promise. When we are willing to sacrifice on behalf of another, it will bring us joy. Another promise. When we are willing to lay down our opinions and preferences in order that we can hear those of another, it will bring us joy. Promise. Yet we hang on to our comforts and our opinions as if our lives depended on them. What happens if we just loosen our grip? Just let him go. Lay him down. We can trust that God will bring us joy. That's what. In whatever it is. I have very strong opinions about a lot of things. Those of you who know me know that about me. I can be a little belligerent when it comes to things like that, and I'm not proud of it. We can chuckle about it. But my strong opinions are not more important than my love for Christ or my love for God's church in whatever configuration that is. Not even my strongest opinions. And you know what? I'm willing to make a trade. I'm willing to give up my comfort and my opinion and my views on things in trade for God's joy. I'm willing. I'm right here. I'm telling you, I am willing to trade all of those things for the joy of the Lord. And I want to know that joy in fullness, in completeness. I want all of it. I'm greedy that way. And I hope you are too. You know, we're facing changes in our church coming forward. I don't preach this message lightly. I don't just say, I'm not just up here beating on the pulpit. Things are going to change. Even if we merge with a couple of churches and they all come here, then guess what? And there are 70 people that are going to come be and bring their opinions and their views and their ideas about things and come be a part of the greater body of Christ in this place. And guess what? We better be ready. With what? With sacrificial love. We better be ready to lay down our lives to, at the very least, welcome the ideas of others. As soon as we're not welcoming at all. God is doing a thing. God is getting us ready for something. God's been getting us ready for something for a couple of years. God keeps bringing this kind of message to me, and I don't know why. I had someone after church first service this morning, ask me if I was angry. What are you mad about? I'm not mad. I'm not angry. And then there was this series of yeah buts. Yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah. Yeah, but, lay down your life. There is no greater love than this, than to lay down your life for your friends. That's it. Yeah, but, nothing. I'm not angry. Some days, God speaks a prophetic word, and I get either the praise team can come forward. I either get the benefit or the burden of sharing it, and that's what I'm called to do. But I want all of you to consider what it means to lay down your life. What it means to maybe give up even your strongest opinion about the way things should be. So you can see what God is doing for us in the future, to see a new thing. And I want to think about it now so that we don't have to think about it so hard when it actually happens. Right? Pray with me.